You're listening to the Converging Paths podcast, brought to you by Barakat Trust, with the support of the Al Tahrir Trust and the Aga Khan Trust for Culture.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Hugo Cook from the Barakat Trust, and we're very lucky to have Noor Haj with us today. Noor recently worked with us, the Arab British Centre and Leighton House in London, on this beautiful collaborative exhibition where she really explored ways to bring talismanic symbols and other art forms from the Islamic world to life through her stunning textile work. Hi, Noor.
Hi, Hugo.
Good to see you again. Why don't we start? Just tell us a little about yourself, about your work.
So, yeah, as you've mentioned, my name is Noor Haj and I'm an artist. I primarily work with textiles. I mean, for the time being, that's my interest. I mostly deal with topics such as identity, storytelling, and cultural practices from West Asia and Southwest Asia. And yeah, using textiles as a medium.
Brilliant. You talk about textiles. What exactly is it about textiles that draws you as a medium?
Well, the thing is, working with textiles comes as like second nature to me. I do have to mention, I worked as a fashion designer for over a decade. I mean, in the fashion industry, I had my own brand and I worked for other designers. So I've always kind of worked with textiles. And it's always been something that, like I said, is second nature to me. So I learned how to embroider or knit and things like that from a very young age. So there's that aspect of it. There's also the aspect of, I find it very appealing in terms, like visually from like a texture and the colors and all of that. But also there's some sort of vulnerability when it comes to textile art. Like when you look at a textile piece there, you feel a warmth and a vulnerability at the same time that I'm really drawn to. Mm. And the thing is, like, I've learned how to work with textiles, whether that's embroidery or knitting or weaving, from my grandmother and my mother. So it's something that's, you know, that I've known how to use and kind of comes naturally to me since like a very young age.
That's brilliant. And how do you, bring the supernatural into your work?
It's funny because sometimes when people hear supernatural, they tend to think like something that has to do with sci-fi. when I talk about supernatural, it means something that's not, you know, can't be scientifically proven or that's not physical or tangible or anything like that. So the real interest and focus started during my research fellowship at the V&A Museum. Mm. So I spent 9 months at the V&A, you know, researching all sorts of textiles and jewelry from West Asia. And it ended up focusing everything on divine and supernatural protections from the evil eye and illnesses. So it's something that's really integrated into our culture. So it's thing, what made me realize during my research is that how integrated it is to the point where I've never actually noticed it that much. So it's in our speech, the way we speak, it's the way we eat, it's the way, you know, what we wear in terms of jewelry, in terms of colors. You know, there's some sort of cultural practices like fumigation, for instance, things like that, that we just, while I was growing up, it's stuff that we did automatically as like a habit, as a reflex, never really thinking about it twice. And those 9 months at the V&A, what happened is that I really started looking at why we did these things and why we do these things and how we do them in terms of colors, in terms of design, in terms of cultural practices. Yeah, all sorts of things, like even the types of beads that we use, the types of the color of the metal that we use in our jewelry, whether it's silver or gold, all of that is imbued with meaning and symbolisms.
That's amazing. In terms of what role the supernatural plays in West Asian art and even life, as you said today, can you give me a couple of examples, whether it's what the different colors represent, what roles can they have? You mentioned silver and gold.
Yeah, so just to give you an example, for instance, like silver and gold, those tend to reference the sun and the moon. So silver for the moon and gold for the sun. So for a very long time, we've kind of looked at the sun and the moon as, you know, entities that have some sort of talismanic power, some sort of protection. they give a certain energy to a person and things like that. And the way people have used their talismanic powers is primarily through jewelry. So when you look at jewelry and adornments in West Asia and North Africa, almost all the time, they are not only decorations, but also have some sort of element that is meant to protect or some sort of practical element as well. And so you see a lot of mix of gold and silver in one item of jewelry. And the idea is that the silver that references the moon is supposed to bring tranquility and serenity. And the gold that references the sun is supposed to give a warmth and high energy to the person. And the idea is to have an equal balance of both. And that means that the person's energies and the person's way of life would be completely balanced.
That's beautiful, yeah. So you say people are wearing these talismans mostly as jewelry. Is that often for, you know, particular events, particular circumstances, or is it a daily thing? Is the reason these talismans are mostly found in jewelry because then it's something that's always with you and you can go around everywhere? Or is it almost like putting on the fine jewelry for a specific event?
You have different kinds. You have some that are specific for certain events, like big ceremonies, such as weddings, funerals, you know, the birth of somebody, things like that. But then you have everyday jewelry that people wear all the time. And it's a mix of the jewelry having or believed to have talismanic powers. And so you want to kind of wear them every day to have that protection. But it's also, like I said, they also have a practical element to them. To give you like one basic example. So one of the items that I looked at when I was at the V&A was this headpiece that was part of a national, I don't know, it's not a national dress, it's more like a regional dress in Palestine. And that headpiece had coins kind of embroidered all over it. And the idea here was that the woman or the bride that got gifted this headpiece for her wedding, that was considered, the headpiece was considered kind of her savings account, if you want to kind of explain in a different term. So she would have these coins and she would wear them. And then if ever needed, she can sell one of these coins or exchange it for something. So that's where it comes from. And the thing is, a lot of people in the region used to be, I mean, I'm not gonna generalize here. It really depends on the area. But some were nomadic people. So you needed to carry your wealthy thing or whatever had value. You needed to be able to carry it on you quite easily. So that's where the idea of practicality comes in, where you kind of are wearing, you're wearing on a daily basis your what I just called the savings account, basically.
I love the idea of, you know, wearing the savings account to the wedding and things. It's fantastic. So you recently, as I mentioned earlier, worked on this beautiful exhibition at Leighton House in London. And in that, you worked with members of the community to look at images and symbols from the region, from Leighton House's collection itself, to create these talismanic-like objects. A lot of people love Leighton House. A lot of people are yet to go. So if you were to recommend people see a particular artwork or two at Leighton House, or even in the wider UK, what would you pick?
Okay, I'll start with Leighton House. So first of all, I think if you're able to go to Leighton House, you should definitely go, because it's really, it's a place, there's nothing like it in London. I have to say, like, as a historical house in London, there's really nothing like it. So I obviously, I'm quite biased, and I would say the Arab Hall is, if you can spend as much time as you can in it, it's quite beautiful, because the more time you spend, the more things you discover, and with the water fountain and everything, and the gold and the blues and all of that, like, it's quite mesmerizing. The tiles in the Arab Hall are amazing. Like, they're this sort of, it's a mishmash of tiles from different places. It's quite beautiful. Like, I really can't describe it. I highly recommend everybody to go see it. Now, if we want to talk about the wider UK, right now, up till January 2024, I believe, there's a really, looks like what a really interesting exhibition at the Tate St. Ives. And I think it's called the Casablanca School or something like that. And it's about modern art from Morocco.
That's actually part of one of our current projects at the Barakat Trust, funnily
oh,
enough.
Really? So, oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so for those listening, Noor's project at Leighton House last year was part of our hands-on Islamic art project, which we'll talk about more shortly. And it's an initiative to engage people in the UK with these amazing collections of Islamic art at places like Leighton House, where they've got these gorgeous tiles Noor was describing that often aren't really seen enough or accessed enough, or a lot of people aren't aware they're there right on our doorstep. And this year's round, we're working with the Tate St. Ives on that project. So encouraging everyone to go to that too. That does look fantastic.
Yeah.
So really interesting about Leighton House. And of course, in this project, you worked with members of the local community, people who live around Leighton House in London, people who have completely different backgrounds to you and different skill sets to each other, some having lots of experience with textiles, some having absolutely none at all. And you worked with them to create pieces that could be put in the exhibition for the public to go and see. And, you know, I went and they really looked amazing. And I think it's one of those fantastic things, the idea that people can work with an artist to explore the content of a museum creatively and even contribute to an exhibition. And so how did you find it? How can modern art being made in today's world link people to the past and the heritage of their own or other cultures, do you think?
So, I mean, I'm going to talk about the experience that I've had with that collaborative piece that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Because we, the eight people that were part of the group that worked on it, we really tried, because what we did is that we did an open call, and really there was a lot of interest in it. And so a lot of people applied. It was really quite difficult to select the eight people, the eight participants. But what we wanted to do is that we wanted to have as big as a diversity as possible, in the sense that we wanted to mix people that had some sort of link, like their heritage somehow linked to the Muslim world, and also in diverse in terms of age and in terms of skills. So I wanted to be able to work with people that had already worked with textiles or had a background in art. And also people that were completely no connection whatsoever. Because I believe like the more diverse it is and the more different people are, the more interesting the work is going to end up being. So that was both kind of an advantage and a disadvantage, because I was kind of put in a position where, okay, how do I, in basically five sessions, how do I teach eight people to work with textiles and to get them to work on one piece together? So what we did is that each participant had their own section, had a piece of fabric that they ended up embroidering on. So I had to teach some of them to embroider, and some of them already knew how to embroider, which was also helpful because they were able to, I don't want to say assist me, but if I wasn't able to help somebody because I was busy helping somebody else, they were able to help them. So it played out really well. But the main idea was that I asked him to go around the museum, and I explained a bit the history around the museum. I explained a bit certain pieces, certain tiles, the textiles that were there. And I kind of told them to pick certain symbolisms that they feel, or visual, any visual that they felt a connection to, and then combine that with something from their own personal life to create their own talismanic symbol, basically. So that was the idea behind it. And I thought like this way they could use something that's quite historical with something that's part of a heritage or their heritage with something that's very personal and very contemporary. And it turned out, I mean, it worked. I believe it worked out pretty well. And we put all these pieces together, and we kind of created this piece that was a bit mobile. So it kind of moved a bit with, if you walked past it, because it was all embroidered on this silk organza that's quite lightweight. So if you walked past it, it would move a bit. And so it would create this like idea that it's not one piece, like one static piece. It's like one piece made out of several.
Well, that's brilliant. Yeah, I really thought it was fantastic. When you say it went well, and certainly it did, we heard really great stuff from the participants. I heard some great stuff from people who were in the gallery with me when I went to visit. So it was really terrific. And yeah, as you're saying, I think there's something really fascinating about people getting to learn about art history and things from other cultures, things in galleries that might often seem distant to them, you know, separated from them, whether it's by an ocean or a glass display case, and being able to work on their own pieces in response to that, I think brings people a lot closer to forms of art and to ideas behind the art that might otherwise seem alien to them. So I think it was a terrific piece of work. Did you think there were any challenges working collaboratively? Was it tricky in any way bringing in these new people and working with them? What were the best bits, did you think?
I mean, there's always tricky bits, but in this case, I think the group worked really well together. There was a beautiful energy in the room from day one. I think maybe like the first hour obviously was, you know, people didn't know each other. It was a big ask to put people in the same room and have them get along straight away. But I think after an hour and a half, all of a sudden there was just this beautiful energy. People were laughing, people were talking, and it really created the scene that I wanted it to create. So I came up with the idea, the collaborative piece idea, but also the way we're going to work on it. Thinking about this tradition that we have in the Levant, specifically, I'm thinking about Palestine. So when a woman, traditionally, when a woman gets married, all the women in her family or the neighbors or friends or family friends would gather together, and they would embroider and help embroider her trousseau. So like her wedding gown and all the ceremonial dresses that she's going to be wearing or that she's going to carry throughout her life. And it's something that they did. It's like a communal thing that they did together. But it's also the idea that each woman from her life will have an impact forever in her new life, something that she will carry with her forever. So that's what I wanted to recreate with this collaborative piece. And I wanted these eight people to be able to create these moments together that will, you know, forever be imbued together in this art piece. And what I was really happy about is that from the first session, there was laughter, people were sharing stories. The next day, somebody came in that wasn't feeling very well. They were going through something quite tough in their personal life, and they shared it with the group, and you know, people were supportive. And like, mind you, this is somebody sharing quite an intimate thing with a bunch of people that they just met. And so I felt like there was something in that room that was not only beautiful, but very, very strong. And I will forever remember it. Like, it's something that's going to stay with me forever.
That's beautiful. And I think I'm really interested in these gowns you mentioned. The collaborative piece done for the exhibition we've been talking about was, of course, it had this wonderful aspect of parts and the whole, where you could see each participant's little piece of work and what they'd done, but they all worked together to fit into one thing while still retaining bits of individuality here and there. Like, as you said, you know, people choosing symbols you thought, you said that they should think spoke to them as an individual. So with these gowns, these wedding gowns you mentioned, do the women in the group work on it as sort of one piece where they're all doing sort of equal work to create a shared image? Or are they adding their own individual little bits to the gown so that in future the married woman can look and sort of recognize different women in her life before, you know?
So it's usually like one even image. But sometimes you'll hear, I mean, it's oral stories that were written down in a book. You'll read about women that would just leave a certain mark that's you wouldn't notice it at all, either like a stitch in a different color or something like that. Ooh. Or for instances, like they were, if they came from a family that owned a lot of orange trees, for instance, like they would use an orange tree or an actual orange as a small symbol in their stitching. Little things like that. But in general, it looked like an even image. So it's not something that looked like a patchwork kind of quilt or anything. Yeah.
That book you mentioned of anecdotes and oral histories, do you remember its title for anyone who's interested?
Yes. So it's my favorite book on Palestinian embroidery. It's not anecdotes. It's oral. It's really oral history. It's put together by a journalist who is, I think if I'm not mistaken, she has the biggest collection of Palestinian embroidery in Jordan. Mm. And the book is called Threads of Identity. She is called Widat Kawar, if I'm not mistaken. But basically the book is, she went around for years and years and years, and she interviewed these women that used to embroider, or these women that she bought these dresses from. And not only did she ask them about, you know, where the dresses came from, but, you know, they also talked about how their lives used to be before and how they are now. And yeah, all sorts of like historical things, but also things that are related to jewelry and embroidery.
Oh, sounds fantastic. Well, thank you. What sort of things do you have planned for the future?
So right now I am working on a new body of work, also with textiles, but I'm also infusing other things, other mediums into it. And this body of work is quite personal, much more personal than any of the work that I've done before. And yeah, hopefully I'll be able to show it as a solo exhibition at a gallery, which I'm looking into either here in Dubai or in London.
Mm, fantastic. Well, anyone who's interested in what we've been talking about, both at Leighton House with what Noor did and what she suggested visiting at Tate St. Ives down in Cornwall, these ways of engaging with Islamic art in a bit more of a hands-on way, do check out our website at the Barakat Trust if you want to see what sort of projects we're working with, ranging from weaving sessions like this to people making their own Mughal-era album covers in response to manuscripts, all sorts of things. So you can see what we've been doing, but also get a chance to join in. And thank you so much, Noor, for speaking to us today. It was really interesting. I want to go back and have a read of some of the things you've been talking about. Lovely to speak to you again. And I hope to see your work soon in the future again.
Thank you, Hugo.
Thanks. Lovely to see you. Bye for now.
Bye.